Hey, did you know that Western and Guelph are playing this week?
Not only do I know it, me and Colby recorded a video for the Guelph Griffins.
So now we know that they're cursed. They're going to lose.
Not only are they going to win, but Ryan Da Silva is going to score the winning goal. I think the games are Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday, but Elliot, it's not going to be a Sunday game.
That's right, because Western's going to sweep them in two in a row.
It's not going to happen. The miracle Western run is done.
No, it's not.
You knocked off a couple of big teams. You're done. That's it.
So
you're running into a wall on Thursday.
So I already have to wear a Toronto jersey at some point because Toronto beat them during the regular season. Did you hear about the David Amber connection to all this?
Give it to me.
So David Amber's daughter sang the national anthem before game one Toronto Western. And Toronto won that game. So when it was back for the deciding game three, they wanted her back, but it was family day weekend, so she was gone.
Yeah.
So it's all Dave Amber's fault that Toronto lost.
Oh, Dave. That's okay. You know what? Guelph's going to put everything straight.
But I wanted to give a shout out. I got a direct message on Twitter from a Judy Renberg, and she said that her daughter, Emily, does the play-by-play on Western Radio for the game.
Oh, no way.
And because she's a broadcaster from Western, we know she's outstanding.
Naturally.
So I just wanted to wish her good luck in calling two Western victories this weekend.
What's the radio station at Western for Guelph? And when I was at Guelph, I used to do some work at CFRU, a couple of blues shows.
CHRW.
Oh, you know.
Were you there, Alma? Did you go there too?
All smiles. 93.3 CFRU.
So good luck to Emily. And good luck to the Mustangs.
As your season concludes this weekend, it was a great run, Purple. Make way for the Griffins. Your phone hasn't stopped beeping since Monday, Elliot. It just beeped as we tried to start recording this podcast. What's
but I
coming
did reintroduce
in now?
Myself to my family.
Yeah? Were they happy to see you again, or they want another trade deadline Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
As I said, after dinner on Monday night on the way home, I called my wife and said, send your boyfriend back to his home.
Daddy's coming home. Wide brush, what was the biggest story for you coming out of Monday? We're going to drill down on a lot of the individual trades, what this means for the teams, signings, all of it. But what was your big takeaway? Now you've had a couple of days to contextualize all of it. What was your big takeaway from Monday?
Carolina was the biggest surprise to me. I thought the biggest news, especially for hockey fans in Canada, was Markstrom's injury, but that's not really a trade, obviously. I thought Carolina, for me, was the big one.
Mm-hmm.
The going to get Trocheck. When we reported the Trocheck, that they were in on him and that they were closing in on him, you know, I had a couple of people reach out to me and said that that can't be right. And I understand the counterintuitiveness of that kind of nature, because Carolina was looking for D and they were looking for goalies. And they were simply saying that, why would they be on Trocheck? And, you know, I remember a few years ago when Mark Bergevin was first hired by the Canadiens, I didn't know Bergevin that well, so from his career. And, you know, I just asked if I could meet with him. And we had a conversation. And one of the things he talked about was, when you're a GM, you hit singles until you're ready to swing for the upper deck, right? And he talked about when Chris Pronger was available from Edmonton, he was working for the Blackhawks and they had a chance to get him. And it just didn't make sense. And Blackhawks fans will be able to tell me off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I think it would have cost them the draft pick that got them either Kane or Taves. And so they said at the time, they decided not to pull the trigger because it just didn't make sense for them at that point. And then later I asked him about that. And he said, no, it's different now. It's harder to get good players. When good players become available, you have to go get good players. So I think Carolina looked at it like, we like Trocheck. I know it doesn't seem like he's what we need, but he's a good player and we want him, so we're going to get him.
Technically, Don Waddell is, of course, the general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, and it is Don Waddell's trade.
Yep.
But I looked at the Vincent Trocheck trade and I said to myself, this has Eric Tulsky written all over it. Underperforming boxcar numbers, but the underlying numbers continue to be outstanding for Vincent Trocheck. This, to me, screams Eric Tulsky calling Don Waddell nonstop, saying, if we have a chance to get this guy, get him. He is money in the bank.
Yeah, you know, I think the Hurricanes have a pretty collaborative effort there. You're right, Waddell makes the calls.
Sure.
But Tulsky has a big say, and the owner absolutely has a huge say. You know, one of the things the owner talked a lot about was, you know, our first round pick, either one of them, is not going for a rental. I heard he didn't even want his second round pick going for a rental. And if you look at the deals they made, they traded the first rounder, Vancouver's, for Shea, who's got 4 years remaining.
Yep.
And when it came to Vatanen, they were more willing to give up a prospect as opposed to a higher pick. It was a fourth that could be a third. So I do think you're right. I think Tulski has a big stick there. I think the owner has a big stick there. And I think Waddell has a big stick there. And I think all of that can kind of happen.
Talk about this in the blog at sportsnet.ca. Why would the Florida Panthers want to get rid of Vincent Trocheck?
The number one reason I heard, now, Chris Johnston got a lot of pickup for, he said on the radio on Monday that he'd heard the Panthers had been asked to cut $10 million from payroll by the end of the year. So, you know, that is a move that makes sense. But I heard...
Well, you just spent $70 million on the goal.
Well, I think that's kind of one goes with the other. I think they're frustrated that they're, you know, they're not better and, you know, they're in the same spot and the crowds, I guess, are still an issue. But the biggest thing I heard was that Joel Quenneville does not think that team is competitive enough. He thinks they're too comfortable. And I think while they were still in the playoff race, he wanted to send a message that just because you have a long-term contract here and you may like it here, if you don't perform here, that doesn't mean you're going to stay here.
See, Brian Burke refers to those moves in Burkean fashion as shooting a hostage to get everybody's attention. Was that Dale Talon's way of shooting a hostage? Do I have your attention now? Says Jules in Pulp Fiction. Oh, did I break your concentration?
There is something to that, yes. I think Trocheck and Quenneville were a bad match. They didn't get along. They didn't see eye to eye. Quenneville didn't like Trocheck's game, and I think he made it very clear that he felt they needed some more competitive nature in their group, and that was one thing that they could do. Now, I heard there was a lot of interest. You know, I also heard that when Florida was called, a lot of people asked them, like, what's wrong with him that you're making him available? Now, there are some teams who told me that they feel that Trocheck is not the same player since his pretty severe knee injury, and he did come back very quickly from that. But I heard a lot of teams that told me this is still a top two center who's got under contract for two more years at a very reasonable number. If Vincent Trocheck is a UFA right now, you're not getting him at this number. Mm-hmm. So I think people were willing to take a chance. I heard Arizona was in there. I heard Minnesota was in there. I heard Calgary was in there. And the one thing I heard was that Florida, in return, wanted competitive guys. They got two prospects who were going to play, mm-hmm. but they wanted guys who would be competitive. And Wallmark is competitive. And Hall is a really fascinating guy. I mean, his nickname in Minnesota was Hall of Famer because he had a big opinion of himself. And he believes that he is deserving of a lot more opportunity than he gets. He wasn't playing in Carolina. And I think Florida's banking on the fact that he'll go there. He's playing for a new contract. And he's going to be very, very good.
To the other name that you mentioned off the top, and that's Jacob Markstrom. So Monday on trade deadline, Jim Benning was supposed to speak just after 3 o'clock Eastern, after the closing bell. And didn't happen. And we were wondering, okay, where's Jim Benning? And then I think it was either you or CJ who came over to the main desk and said something about, we think it's an update on Markstrom and it doesn't look good. And so we waited for Jim Benning. And now we're waiting on Jacob Markstrom. Thatcher Demko and the Vancouver Canucks on Tuesday night beat the Montreal Canadiens.
And they could have gotten blown out of that one early.
They were down 2-0 early and Travis Green let his team have it. And they turn around and they win the game. How devastating could this one be for the Vancouver Canucks, considering, I know as we record this podcast, Vegas is on a 6-game rip right now, considering that the Pacific is still very much up in the air.
Well, it could have been huge. I mean, you feel a lot better of yourself after, you know, the first 8 minutes on on Tuesday. You know, I thought they recovered really well. You know, Berkey's always screaming for coaches to use more timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
They did. It worked. The players recovered. They won the game. I mean, what else can you ask for? You look like you're going to get killed and they win. You know, Demko is a confident guy too. Like, this is a guy who pushed back against the organization. He felt they kept him, you know, in the American Hockey League or blocked him from being the number one or getting more opportunity for too long. You know, nobody's wishing injury on anybody else, but I think he believes he's deserving of this chance. I would think that knowing what I know about Demko, he would think, you know, if Markstrom decides to leave after the season, that he can handle the job. You know, you have to have that kind of belief in yourself. I thought they played great. You know, it is amazing. You know, Toffoli has been a really interesting case this year. Beginning of the year, you know, I think there were people who were really unhappy with him in L.A. He really pushed towards the new year to the point where Todd McClellan made the point that I think he should stay. I don't think the Kings were ever really serious about that. I think they talked about it, but it didn't go too deep. And I know they really like Madden. I know they're really happy to get Madden. But, you know, I think it just shows you that sometimes we all need change in our life. We can get stale in certain situations. We can do things and be in places for too long. I know it's early and it's a bit of a jolt, but I'm kind of wondering if Toffoli's getting, and the fact that Tanner Pearson's there, I think it's been good for Vancouver. Vancouver's been good for Pearson, and I think he helped convince Toffoli this can be good for him too.
You know who was really good on Tuesday night for Vancouver? Bo Horvat.
Yeah.
Another 20-goal season. And I worked with Kevin Bieksa on ice surfing on Tuesday night, and he was telling some obviously wonderful Vancouver stories. And one of the great ones that we were talking about is how Bo Horvat, and you guys did this feature a couple of years ago on Hockey Night with how much he improved his skating. And so was talking with Bieksa about that. He said, you know where this guy's really improved himself more than anything else? He said, in the gym, getting stronger and getting more athletic. He said he joined the Vancouver Canucks, came into camp as an 18-year-old, and was last place in races, like losing to the goaltenders on a consistent basis. And then went about climbing up that ladder. Now, he's not going to beat the Sedins in a marathon anytime soon, but from then to now, it's night and day for Bo Horvat.
Well, I think it's proof, because you follow the juniors. You remember when John Tavares was drafted number one, there were people who didn't think he'd be the player he turned out to be.
Can't skate, never make it in the NHL, can't skate.
It's just proof to people in life, if you commit yourself to getting better at certain things, you can. Maybe you'll never be elite, top 100% at them, but it doesn't mean you can't substantially improve in them.
You know what else Bieksa mentioned? And he said he's never talked about this publicly before. When it was obvious that he was done with the Vancouver Canucks, Vancouver gave him permission, him and his agent, to go and seek a trade somewhere else. And the first team that was in and flew him in, and this is where you can live, and this is where your kids are going to go to school, and this is how you're going to be set
up.
San Jose Sharks.
You know, I'll tell you a story. That day...
And by the way, San Jose Sharks fans, when that started to trickle out a little bit, were none too impressed.
Well, I'll tell you a story about that. When I got a tip that that was happening, and I reported the day of that draft, I think that draft was Florida, but I can't remember 100%.
That would have been McDavid draft.
I reported that he was going to San Jose, or San Jose was the front runner. And people told me I was nuts. And then
he was convinced he was gone.
Yes.
He was convinced that it was done. You were bang on.
And then, you know, it ended up being Anaheim. And some people, you know, said to me, you were wrong. And I always stood by it. So I'm glad for a change. I was right about something.
There you go. You win. You win on that one. And on that, we'll kick off the podcast. 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks.
Back to the point now for Fleury over on the far side. Kept back in a pass. Deflects off of the wing and now roaring in on the goaltender. And
now this
Mrazek, he comes roaring out of the net.
This cannot be a penalty. Mrazek comes out. I don't even know if he knows that Mrazek has come roaring out of the net. Reimer is already gone and has not returned to the Carolina bench. This could get interesting.
Yeah, I don't even think that Clifford's really even looking at the goaltender, but that is one heck of a hard collision. The mask came off, and you've got to hope that Mrazek, who's come in relief and played really well, settled things down.
We're just halfway through the second period, and David Aries,
unbelievable,
will be getting ready to play hockey. Might be needed tonight.
David Aries, by the way, is a regular participant in the Leafs skills sessions at practice. So
and his name is?
David Aries.
David Aires.
A-Y-R-E-S.
All right. Well, David, welcome to the NHL. I trust you were able to get the contract signed.
He's also the Zamboni driver over there. He is. That's great. So I play 4 years of junior, 7 years of the minors, an accountant in Chicago gets a shot. That was him, pony driver in Toronto. Life's pretty fair.
Isn't it, though? Well, he's going to start with a 3-1 lead and a power play here for the Carolina Hurricanes. And he's got 28 minutes and 41 seconds to try to play goal here at the National Hockey League level. I believe I can see butterflies flying around his head.
Elliot, E-Bug, David Ayers. Hang on, before your thoughts.
Okay.
As a member of the Society for International Hockey Research,
yes,
I have a duty to do something.
Okay.
To point out that David Ayers was not the first.
Who was the first?
A guy by the name of Len Broderick, who was the house goaltender for Toronto in 1958.
Okay.
And he played one game. It was at Maple Leaf Gardens. I want to say it was early in the season, was October. Jacques Plante was a goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens, and he couldn't play that day, so the house goalie went in. Len Broderick, brother of NHLer Ken Broderick, played his only game in the NHL was a game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Toronto guy played for the Habs against the Leafs. Habs win 6-2. So the original E-Bug in Toronto, with all due respect, David Ayers, if you're listening to this, was not you. It was Len Broderick.
I'm looking at a picture right now.
And you know the interesting part about this? So Parkhurst, the card company, so Parkhurst would go to only a couple of games and take all the pictures for the year. And Parkhurst was at this game. So there was this big mystery the year later, 1959, when the Parkhurst set came out, and there's all these pictures of Montreal players and Toronto Maple Leafs players with this goalie in the background, and no one could figure out who it was. It's supposed to be Jacques Plante. It's not Jacques Plante. So it took years and years till they finally figured out that was the house goalie who was in, Len Broderick. And so he's in all these pictures in the Parkhurst 1959 set, played one game in the NHL.
Well, credit to the Montreal Canadiens, because I Googled it while you were talking about it. I did not know this story. And the Canadiens, in the Our History portion of their website, have an interview with Len Broderick.
What does he say?
October 30th, 1957. He was...
Oh, it was 57? Was it 58? Okay, yeah, I'm off.
Well, here you go. Yeah, you're way off. You're really an idiot.
I'm slipping.
So he led the Toronto Marlboros to the Memorial Cup Championship in 1956. Yep. He said that he was paid $25 a game to go down to Maple Leaf Gardens. And game number four, Jacques Plante has an asthma attack.
Got it.
And he makes his only NHL appearance. He said, I was supposed to be there an hour before the game, but I arrived 45 minutes before the start. They had to go and dig out his equipment, so that took a little bit of time, too. Maurice Richard, the captain, came over and spent time talking to me. That helped. He said Frank Mihaljevic got a breakaway on him. And now, Broderick had been at the Leafs training camp, and Mihaljevic had a move that beat him every single time he tried it. He always put the puck between my legs, and this time I was determined he wasn't going to beat me through the legs, and he made the save.
Wow. Great story.
So it was 4-0 after two on goals by Donnie Marshall, two by Henri Richard, and one by Maurice. And then he said it was still 4-0. He says, I'd played with Pulford and Bond the year before. They had a few things to say during the game. What are you trying to do to us? Barry Cullen scored at 9:39 of the third to break it, and his former junior teammate, Bobby Bond, made it 6-2. And he was an accountant after, and the Canadians gave him an extra $150. The going rate was $100, $25 from the Leafs for being at the game. $100 was what you got paid. The Canadians gave him a 50% tip. They gave him $150.
Nice touch. Classy organization.
And he said that he got a picture at the end of the game flanked by Henri and Maurice Richard.
And was on all the Parkhurst cards the following season.
There you go.
Is it in there?
No, it's not there.
The Parkhurst part is an interesting part of the story, too.
But thank you to the Montreal Canadiens website, ourhistory.canadiens.com, for the interview I just read with Len Broderick.
So, because we always want to get her name on this podcast, a few years ago, when I was working at Hockey Night with you guys, I asked Kathy Broderick if there was any relation. And the answer is...
I didn't even think about that.
Just wanted to get Kathy's name on the podcast.
That's good. I got her on the blog this week.
There you go. I know. It's our job just to keep Kathy as a famous hockey citizen out there on podcasts.
So what
did
you think about this as it all unfolded?
Listen, I cheer for chaos, as you well know. So I loved it. I understand the other side that says, you know what, this is something that the NHL probably frowns upon. And I understand the goalie fraternity that says this compromises the credibility of the position and can't we find someone other than a 42-year-old Zamboni driver? And is this the headline the NHL want? Blah, 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 blah. But the guy inside of me that just loves chaos and wants to remind himself that sports is supposed to be like Toys R Us says it was fun.
It worked out great. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that this was a great story, but the process needs to be tuned. That's the thing. Like, we always judge process versus results.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a player will say, I don't want to hear we had 58% expected goals when we lose 8-2.
Yeah, the analytics crew doesn't talk to coaches about expected goals after losses. Just heads up.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, you can have a bad process and a good result, and you can have a good process and a bad result. So you always look at process versus result. The result of this was spectacular. It was a great story. Like, people loved it. People were very happy for David Ayers. They were very happy for Sarah Ayers, who we're going to interview here. And the league was happy. I'm sure that the story turned out great. And the Hurricanes milked it for every cent as they could, as they should.
Yes, add that, please. That's a great job by Carolina.
And the other thing, too, is so Carolina's PR guys are the two main people I know are Mike Sunheim and Pace Sagister. And as a matter of fact, Kyle Hanlon, who used to work for the Hurricanes, actually tweeted out he was getting texts for requests. Like, that is awesome. Like, people still thought Kyle worked for them. And the one thing I wanted to thank them for was they really helped us because they let – to get the interview in before we had to switch to the Vancouver game, they had David come off the ice and go right to Kyle live.
David, it was a scene here as the players came off the ice, the hooting and hollering, the David chants. Who would have thought a playoff series was won this evening? My words won't do any of this justice, so I'd love to know what's been going through your mind the last couple hours.
It's been great. Obviously, that second period was a little shaky, but I told the boys in the dressing room, once we come out for the third, I'll be settled down and ready to win this one.
I mean, you've been here countless times at the ready, but when did you really start to feel or think that, gosh, I may be going in tonight?
Actually, I got a bunch of text messages and said, get in there, and someone came into the room and was like, hey, you better get dressed, hey, you're going out there. So I was a little shocked, but I'm loving it.
Well, and I mean, you've been out on the ice with the Maple Leafs, the Marlies in the past. Did you have any book on any of the shooters that you faced this year?
I actually thought the first one, Tavares, I didn't think he was going to go along the ice, to be honest with you. And he did, a little bit of a screen went in. I'll take credit for that one, but hey, it was a good time.
90 on the back, was that your decision or the team's?
That was definitely their decision, for sure.
All right, well, finally, I'll just ask. I mean, you get credit for the win here tonight, David. I mean, your last game of record that we could find was Allen Cup hockey 5 years ago. How would you just describe what tonight was?
It was awesome. Obviously, the time of my life out there. I've been on this ice many times without fans. Put fans in the mix, and it's a whole different game, obviously. But hey, once in a lifetime, I'll take it.
One more Hockey Night in Canada. Your wife's Twitter account was hilarious as she kind of watched this all unfold. Who are you thinking of? Who would you love to say hi to?
All of them. Obviously her. I knew she was going to blow Twitter up, to be honest. But all my family, all my friends, actually a couple of my buddies came behind the net and they were waving at me. So that was pretty cool, too. So it's a great time.
What was some of the best things you heard here from your now new teammates in Carolina throughout this one?
These guys were awesome. And actually, the spot that settled me down, one of the guys said to me, just have fun. We don't care if you let 10 goals in. That settled me right down, and it was great.
Who was it?
It was Zahala.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Well-deserved, David. Just a wonderful night. Congratulations on the win, and enjoy soaking this one in.
Thank you.
And the Hurricanes did that, and we should shout them out for that because that's fantastic. And then he went into the room where you saw all of those.
The splashes.
First of all, I think it says a ton about the Carolina players.
That third period, Elliot, that was a clinic.
Well, first of all, they went out of their way to make him feel welcome.
Yeah.
And, you know, he calmed down in the third, but they were dynamite. Like, I think it says a lot about the players on that team and the collective character they have. They made that work. But when it was coming to 4-3, I can't tell you how many texts I had from people around the league saying, this is an embarrassment. How can a Leaf employee be Carolina's goalie? How can you have a 42?
Glenn Broderick. Excuse me.
Yeah, here you go. How can you have a 42-year-old guy be the emergency goalie? Like, people were just like, this could be a disaster. And
hang on a second, though. Just pausing that. There was a lot made about Antti Niemi in the 2010 Stanley Cup final as, oh, there's a Zamboni driver from Finland who just found himself in
net. Oh, come
on.
He's an NHL goalie.
I understand
that.
Give
me a break.
But the Zamboni driver thing
is... It's not comparable, okay?
No, I know it's not. I'm just saying, like, enough of all of
this. Yes, I get that. You have to understand what the comparables are. And I think that, you know, it worked out well. And then the same people after, they were like, oh, what a great story. And they're ripping the Maple Leafs. But in the moment, there were a lot of people who really thought this could have been bad. Now, a couple years ago at one of the GM meetings, someone said to me that there was a rule change proposed where each team had to have somebody who'd played college or junior or pro hockey recently hired onto your staff.
To travel?
Yes. Like, it was like a video coordinator, an assistant coach, or a coaching coordinator or something like that, who could be your third goalie everywhere. And the reason it was stopped was because of cost. So you're adding teams to make an extra cost, travel an extra person, you know, all of that stuff. And the teams balked at it. And I don't know if they're going to go to that now, but I do think it's going to be discussed next week. And I think one of the things they're going to talk about is, should there be an age limit here? Like, should it be allowed to be a 42-year-old person?
Why? It wasn't as if he went out and got shell-shocked, and he didn't surrender eight goals.
We just talked about
on 10
this.
Shots.
It's process versus result, right? He had a great night, and thank God he did. And I'm really happy for him and his wife and all of them, their family, and all of the notoriety he's getting. I'm great with it. But what if that goes sideways? Are you always going to gamble the odds? There's a reason there's no 42-year-old goalies in the NHL.
All I know is, if you can make a save, if you can get out there and not embarrass yourself, I don't care how old they are. I mean, I'm old enough to remember, what was it, 3 years ago, watching Al Montoya get pumped for 10 against Columbus.
Okay, stop.
And not
stop
get
with
the
this.
Hook because they didn't want to put Carey Price in because he's playing the next day.
Stop with this, okay? Like, what do you generally taking your bets with?
No, generally you think someone in that situation, they're going to get lit.
No, yes. But I think also it's like playing the odds, right? It's like putting everybody in the best possible
situation. We just talked about expected goals a couple of seconds ago. The expected goals for someone like David Ayers would have been sky high. Absolutely.
You know, like, that was a huge game. It was a huge game. Like, you want to see people do well, which is why I'm really happy for the Ayers. But, like, if that goes wrong, what are we all talking about this week? What a joke the NHL is.
And we're talking about if Carolina misses the playoffs by a point.
Yes.
So let teams carry three goalies.
Well,
expand the roster.
I think that's what we're going to start talking about here. Is there a better process that they could have?
The last position player to play net, Jerry Tappazzini, I want to say in 61 for the Bruins.
Great AHL player.
Who went in from Sudbury, who went in a game against Chicago. I think it was like the last 5 minutes of a game or something like that. And this used to be the way that it was. And every team had the designated, okay, one of the players on the team, if there were two goalie injuries, this guy was going in. And that guy, every now and then in practice, would stay out and take shots. Just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that idea?
Like, well, the top of the blog is about Greg Redquist this week.
Yeah.
It was a similar kind of situation. And he talks about how if you don't play for 2-3 weeks, it's like golfing. Your game goes sideways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm open to any situation that just eases the chances of it being a nightmare.
So you think that the crisis was averted, but they need to correct this now.
They need to fix it. Yes.
We landed the plane okay, but it was close.
Yes.
I'm
just always careful of making jokes after those kinds of things.
No, I understand that. Yes. I tend to skew towards the macabre, and you've known me for long enough to
but
know
the thing
that's
is,
my default.
Like, that stuff doesn't bother me anymore, but like I talked in my piece with Sean Fitzgerald in The Athletic recently, you just never know what people are going to get upset at, right?
I'm a gallows humor kind of guy.
But I am too. Like, it takes an awful lot to offend me. Like
do have thick skin. Yeah, one of the things I'll always say about you is you are almost impossible to offend.
Like you and I, we've worked together a long time. We know that we can be really honest with each other and we can have the gallows humor with each other. But I really find that the line has moved. And we had the Spinning Chicklets guys on the trade deadline.
That was so much fun.
As I said on the radio, it was about 1 minute away from being a disaster. But it was fun.
The video, by the way, they made of the behind the scenes
was
spectacular.
It was excellent. Like, the thing is, it all comes down to what are you willing to handle and what are your employers willing to handle?
Yep.
So you always have to know. Like, the guys at Spinning Chicklets, they are blessed with employers who have a very, like, they're willing to back those guys. Not every employer is willing to do that. You have to be careful.
All right. Are we done with E-Bug? And yeah, you're right. Sarah Ayers is going to be joining us a little bit later on. Do we want to move on from E-Bug or do you want to go back and talk about Parkhurst, 1957, back in my sweet spot of my
life?
That
was a great pull.
I want to get your thoughts on Joe Thornton. And here's a quote. Kevin Kurz from The Athletic with this one. As you get older, you realize you only have so many shots at this thing and it would have been nice to have a chance. I wanted a shot. I've been hunting this thing down for 22 years. You know, one of the most painful clubs for superstar players to be part of is he's the best player to never win a championship club.
Mm-hmm.
And in the NHL, that includes players like Marcel Dion and Gilbert Perreault. It may one day include Henrik Lundqvist. It already includes Jerome Iginla and Daniel Alfredsson and Mats Sundin and these types of players. Can understand the frustration if you're Joe Thornton. Here's my question. Is the issue that Doug Wilson didn't move him, or is the issue that none of the Stanley Cup contenders wanted him? Where's the frustration? Where should it be directed?
I think the frustration probably should be directed at the contenders didn't see a fit right now.
Like, I openly talked about, because, you know, I mean, like all of us, we cheer for great stories. And I think a wonderful story would have been going back to Boston, winning a Stanley Cup and calling it a career. Like, that would have been the perfect Aristotle beginning, middle, end. Story's done. Obviously, not going to happen this year.
So I heard that Boston was never in as much as we all thought. Like, I thought they were in it too. And I was told that wasn't the case.
Okay.
You know, there were reports about Dallas, and I think Dallas had checked. And everybody made the connection because Tom Holley, who was the great VP of media relations in Dallas, he had been in San Jose. He left San Jose to get the job in Dallas, and they get along extremely well. And I think that's kind of where a lot of the connection came from. And I think Dallas had some interest, but they just... You know, they're not a fast team and they don't really have a lot of room from what they're doing right now. And I don't think the interest was as great as it kind of got portrayed. I understand on the day, like, one person sends a tweet and it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard they weren't as in big as everybody thought.
I think there was a feeling, too, that for the longest time, that's why these quotes may have surprised a lot of people, even though over the weekend, Joe Thornton mused that it would be interesting to go to a, paraphrasing here, interesting to go to a team that's a cup contender and something that's crossed his mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were many that thought that, listen, Joe's comfortable in San Jose, and if it's not going to be San Jose, well, it's not going to be a Stanley Cup.
I think that what kind of happened is, this is my theory. It's a quick theory, but it's a theory. Patrick Marleau, it's obvious. He's fast. You know, Pittsburgh, they saw a fit. Edmonton, which was after Marleau early in the year, they thought about him, mm-hmm. and then, you know, they went for Athanasiou. But they considered it. Thornton, I think, is a situation where sometimes he's still, because he's not fast, you don't appreciate it until you see it, right?
People still watch him pass the puck, right? Like, I'm not missing something here. Like, but he's one of the elite passers in the game.
I think his skills are more, we'd rather have him from beginning to end. And the other problem, too, is like Vegas is not that fast a team. Like, everybody talked about Peter DeBoer, and everybody knows Peter DeBoer's appreciation for Thornton. So I think that that was part of the thing. Now, I can't confirm this because nobody will answer the question, but I think Toronto debated it. I think they talked about it, and they thought, what about bringing him here? One of the things I was told is that Doug Wilson told every team, if you're not a legit contender, I'm not trading Joe Thornton to you. Is Toronto a legit contender?
Based on Kyle Dubas's lack of activity, the deadline? No.
Exactly. I think when you look at Toronto, you might not make it through Tampa and Boston.
That's why I looked at Toronto's moves and said, that's a smart play by Dubas.
Yes. So
that's reading the room.
So I think that even if Toronto had gone to Doug Wilson, he would have said no. Not this year. Mm-hmm. Now, here's where I think it gets interesting. San Jose's plan is to be a contender again next year. What does Joe Thornton think? If Joe Thornton believes that a team wants to see him from beginning to end, does he think that San Jose is a contender? If the answer is yes, he stays. If the answer is no, then does he look elsewhere? Secondly, and I saw all your tweets out there, people saying, well, if he wants to win a cup, why would he go to Toronto? Okay, I saw them all, just so you all know that. I think Toronto would be in on him big. I do. But
in the Spezza spot from this season.
Yes. And the other thing, too, is, you know, Thorne's got a really good comfort zone there. He's got his family's there. They love it. Is he going to want to move that? I think, you know, that's, we've talked about this.
What about the medical team that's there? How about the trainers that are there?
Absolutely.
Everyone that works on his body, that knows his body for years.
Absolutely. So I think all of that is a factor. But if he's interested in moving, Toronto would be interested in him. I mean, we all make the jokes about the Greyhounds. He's a left-hand shot. Now, Matthews and Tavares have played with right-hand shot left-wingers. Now, both of those guys, Hyman and Nylander, have had great years. But I think that would be appealing to them. My first playoff series for Hockey Night in Canada was Montreal-Boston. It was the first time, it was 04, it was the first time in Canadians' history they ever won a series down 3-1.
Is that the one where Thornton had the rib injury,
yes,
played through it and got,
yes,
ripped for not playing well?
Well, we broke the story that he had a rib injury that was quiet, but somebody felt bad for the abuse he was taking in the city and gave it to us. Like Kevin Paul DuPont, who's, you know, long history, he's won the Elmer Ferguson, he's a Hall of Famer as a reporter. He wrote a big column saying that maybe he should be stripped of the C. And I actually remember Nick Boynton saying something to DuPont about it. And DuPont, and I always remember this, I always look at these things, because sometimes there's going to be times where someone's going to come after you, and how do you handle it? And DuPont handled it beautiful. He just said, hey, that was me, and if you want to say anything, I'm right here. And he wasn't confrontational about it. He just says, I'm here. That's why I show my face. I always had a ton of respect for DuPont about for that. And then the next full season, he was gone. Like, now everybody talks about Joe Thornton, wonderful other statesman. You know, he's going right to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And I think he still has a lot to offer. I look at all those Toronto guys, they're going through what that guy went through.
So what we're looking at then is Joe Thornton not making a decision on July 1st. You're looking at Joe Thornton probably signing somewhere late in the summer to see what San Jose does. Is his preferred destination to stay where he is?
I believe it is.
Then it's not going to be early, because he's going to wait to see what Doug Wilson does by free agency, by trade, what's the goaltending going to look like, all of it. Many conversations with Bob Bugner. So don't expect a Joe Thornton decision early in the summer.
That's what I felt. I think that, you know, he has to be willing to leave his comfort zone and leave San Jose. and I don't know what he is. And I think he's emotional right now. And like, it sucked for me to read those quotes. I have to admit.
I felt bad too.
Like, you know, like there's a guy, like he tries to do everything right, right? He's a big, boisterous personality. He clearly loves the game. You know, he wants to do well. He wants to play. They're going to have to drag him off the ice. It sucks. I think he does almost everything right. You talk about like the greatest player never to win a Stanley Cup and things like that. When I was young and stupid, I used to think it was a big failure if you didn't win a cup. Okay? And I know it's a hole in people's heart. And if I was a player and I played 20 years and I never won, it would hurt me too. But the thing that this job has allowed me and the access that working for Hockey Night gives you is how hard it is to win. You know, I used to think that about Charles Barkley, failure, never won a championship. And Shaq gives it to him all the time. But now I recognize how hard it is to win. And you get an indication. I'm not on the road as much, so I don't see anymore. But you have a better indication of the work that you have to put in to be as elite as a guy like Joe Thornton or Charles Barkley was for all those years they played.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sucks he didn't win, but I don't think it says anything less about the effort that you put into it.
Do you think it's worse if you get close? And Joe Thornton got close with San Jose. Gilbert Perreault got close with the French Connection and the Buffalo Sabres against the Philadelphia Flyers. Marcel Dion never did.
The closer you get, the harder it is to lose. You know, we talked about with Darcy Tucker that one year that he thought they'd win the cup.
But yeah.
I told him I thought he was wrong and he almost beat the crap out of me in that hair studio in Taz Hair Salon. I remember my first playoffs for Hockey Night. Calgary wins the Western Conference over San Jose. I go in the San Jose room to get an interview. And like, those were good guys who were very helpful. Mike Ricci, Scott Hannon. They were like, I'm so sorry, I can't do it. I'm devastated. That's why I always had to interview the guy who lost the Stanley Cup final, the captain, Daniel Alfredson, 2007. He wasn't the captain, but Mike Richards, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys, to do those interviews, it hurt. Alfredson was always the best. Sundin was pretty good. But Alfredson was always the best. Like, he had to come out on the worst losses, and it sucked. I think Crosby did one in 2008. Alexander Ovechkin at the Sochi Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those are the ones I always remember. Like, the guys who come out on the worst losses. I actually wrote, I think I've told the story. Have I told the story about how I wrote him a note in Russian? Like, just to say, like, I want you to know that I appreciate it. Apparently, it was like the worst Russian ever. but like, so to me, like, when people say, like, you're a loser if you've never won a championship, it's wrong. It's the way I used to think.
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid thinking. You understand how hard it is to get there. And to be elite for as long as guys like Joe Thornton and Charles Barkley were elite, maybe in win, but that's really freaking hard. Like, that's a victory in itself.
Shifting gears. Now that it's out there, does it have to happen eventually?
What's that?
Zach Parise and Andrew Ladd.
I don't know where this is going to go.
It's been a tough go for Andrew Ladd with the Islanders. Get it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting situation with Zach Parise and the Minnesota Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Complicating all of it from a team point of view, there's probably not another player that's as popular in Minnesota right now than Zach Parise.
Well, that was the thing. Like, you know, we were fortunate that we had Bruce Boudreau on when that news was breaking.
Yeah.
And we'll give credit to the reporter who first reported it, Frank Saravelli. You know, I also am going to give credit to Michael Russo, because nothing happens in Minnesota without Michael Russo knowing about it. I can tell you this is a really delicate story, because, you know, Frank was the first guy to get the confirmation. You know, I think a few people were working on it, and the sensitivity was Lou Lamoriello. A lot of people wanted this to work. I think the Wild wanted to make it to happen. Parise's representatives at Newport wanted it to happen. I think Andrew Ladd wanted it to happen. Ladd's representatives at CAA wanted to make it happen. And I think Lamoriello wanted to make it happen. Lamoriello's got a lot of time for Zach Parise.
The New Jersey
So think about this deal. Everybody wants to make it happen. And it didn't happen. Why?
Money.
Because it's hard.
Money.
Now, the one guy who didn't want this to happen previously, and I think it was Russo who wrote this.
Paul Fenton?
Was Paul Fenton. Like, when this first got proposed to him, he was like, no, we're not doing this. And look, everybody's kicking the crap out of Paul Fenton. I'm not. I understand why he didn't want to do it. The tricky thing with this particular story is the money. And the issue with the money is that Zach Parise has term left on his deal that's $37 million in cap room, although it's only $18 million in cash. He has no bonuses left. He's got none left. Andrew Ladd has 3 years left, and he's got $16.5 million in cap room, $12 million in cash, $9 million of it in signing bonuses. And so I think the battle became over, how do you split this? How do you make this work? And if we're going to do this, what's the sweetener? And one of the things I heard was that Kiefer Bellows might go in the deal from Islanders to Minnesota. And someone's going to kick me for saying this because it's going to be a tip-off as to how Lou Lamoriello does business. And I said to someone, why do you think Bellows is in the deal? And he said, Lou Lamoriello called him up out of nowhere to play an NHL game. That's a tell.
Showcase.
It's a showcase. The other issue I heard here was that the cap recapture issue for Minnesota. Now, when there were rumors going around that Shea Weber was going to be retiring or never play again, everybody talked about what Nashville could face with that. Same deal with Minnesota. Now, somebody who was involved in the conversations told me Zach Parise, as you said, is the most popular guy in Minnesota. He wants to live there when his career's done. Do you think he's going to clobber the Wild? Mm-hmm. That was going to get worked out. But like, I think this tells you how difficult this deal was. They worked on it for, I'm told, weeks. Ladd agreed, Parise agreed, but they couldn't get it to work out. It's a hard deal. Now that it's out, I don't know what that's going to do, but I can tell you one of the reasons I'm pretty sure it stayed quiet as long as it did was because of Lamoriello. Guys did not want to upset him.
Okay, so you brought up the Kiefer Bellows situation, and that's the tell for the Islanders. And now that, unlike Paul Fenton, Bill Guerin seems amenable to trading someone like Zach Parise. What does this tell us about what this offseason will look like for the Minnesota Wild? Zucker gone, Parise almost gone. They did hang on to Matt Dumba and Jonas Brodin, and I would imagine they would be getting a lot of calls on those two defensemen specifically. What happens in the offseason for the Minnesota Wild? I still think they're one of the more interesting teams.
Well, the one thing is, I'm pretty impressed with the way Guerin's handled his job this time.
Yeah.
Like sometimes guys go in there and, oh, I got to show I'm in charge. I'm going to make some big moves. I'm going to.
You're gone.
And he's been patient. Like he could have blown up the team a couple of times and he didn't. He held on. We talked about, he held on to Fiala. Looks better. Held on to Donato. Looks like he's coming. You know, he hasn't moved Dumba. He hasn't moved Brodin. I thought Boudreau got a bit of a raw deal, but I see why it happened. You know, that it was a marriage. It was time for both those guys to go in other directions. The biggest question I think the Wild have to answer is, what does Brodin want? Brodin's heading into the final year of his contract. His cap hit's just under $4.2 million. And you forget, because it seems like he's been around forever, he's going to be 27 in July.
And he's one of the rare defensemen that actually has the nerve to play defense.
I know one of the teams that really scouted him heavily, and the scout's still working, so he doesn't want his name out there. But he just said that when they were scouting Brodin, the report on him was he's going to play for 15 to 20 years. He's never going to wow you, but he's going to play for a long time because he has that kind of quiet, solid game that you know you can depend on. And like you said, he likes to defend. I think the biggest question about him is going to be, what does he want? And is Minnesota willing to pay that number? So to me, that's kind of the, where this conversation goes, is what's Brodin's next contract going to look like?
Move along. Because we have Sarah Aristotle to get to and a lot to catch up on from trade deadline. I want to ask about Vegas and Robin Lehner. I can understand, you know, the Nick Cousins move. I can understand the Alec Martinez move. I'll be honest with you. The Lehner move was a shock.
It was a surprise to me. To the point when somebody told me it was Vegas, I didn't believe it. It was kind of like the Carolina thing. Now, we talked that we thought Vegas was looking for a defenseman, right? I mean, a goalie, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we knew there was a chance they could upgrade, but I don't know if anybody saw that.
Not Lehner. Do they automatically have the best tandem in the NHL? Now, with all due respect, Dallas.
Who's better?
Dallas?
Yeah, Dallas. Well, they're having a great year. I was surprised, but I get it. Like, why not make yourself better? It's a message to the team. It's funny now, like, with Lehner, like, if he disagrees with you and you're reporting, he's coming after you. Like, that's why I wrote, I heard the issue was term. I heard that Chicago was willing to do 2 years.
He wanted three?
Lehner told the Athletic guys, I think it was Mark Lazarus, he was willing to do three. So that, it makes sense based on what I heard. Now, one of the things we always get tripped over now are words. Like, people say there's no offer. Well, I think what happens sometimes is that maybe there's not a formal offer, mm-hmm. but you kind of talk, right? Like, what are you thinking? Oh, I want 5 years. Well, we're willing to do two. Well, I'd be willing to do three. I think that the two sides kind of knew where they were. I think, you know, like, I kind of hate the semantics of the whole thing. If I sit here and say, Jeff, like, what term do you want? And you say five. And I say, you know, we're not willing to do that. And you say, well, I'm going to go shop myself somewhere else. Okay, maybe I've never made you an offer, but I know you want 5 years, right? Like, I know if this is going to work.
Just not wasting breath on a conversation. Yes. It's going to go nowhere.
You know, Lehner wanted term. They said two. He said three. And they weren't willing to go to three. And that's kind of where we are now. I think it's going to be interesting to see what Chicago does. Like, this...
I was going to say, does this automatically mean that Corey Crawford wins and he gets the contract? Do they go shopping for, they have Malcolm Subban as a goaltender there now. Do they go shopping for another number one?
I don't think it's a guarantee. Of course, I'll just say that and Crawford will sign a 3-year extension. But I think Chicago, like, you know, judging from what I'm hearing out there, I think Chicago's got a chance to really go in a different direction here.
How big?
Just in the sense of...
We talked about Duncan Keith all season.
Like, I heard there was interest in Keith, but...
From Florida.
I might have been more. But the thing is, like, I think Chicago kind of looked at it like, I don't think it's really fair to go to this guy in the middle of the year. I think that's a... Actually, I shouldn't say... I don't know that. I would suspect that. I suspect if Duncan Keith's going to go, it's going to be an off-season conversation. And... I do think they could say, you know, we're kind of doing a bit of a rebuild.
How much?
I don't believe that Taves or Kane are going anywhere. I still think they could get a lot for Keith. For some reason, I could see, I don't think he wants to go anywhere. I really don't think he wants to. But I think there's some real interest in him. And not just Florida. I heard there were more that at least asked.
Dylan Strome. And Alex DeBrincat hasn't gone great this year.
You know, he hasn't had a great year, but I'm still betting on him.
With that release? Sure.
I like that contract. I think it's a good contract. I don't know. Strome, I just don't know.
Okay, so that's part of the Chicago Blackhawks story. And like all stories in the NHL, it is evolving and it is continuing. And Elliot follows it closely at 31 Thoughts at sportsnet.ca and here on the podcast. Let's turn our attention back to the e-bug story. And we've seen David Ayers everywhere, going back to Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday nights. He's been on television, on radio. Today's show is wonderful. Always great when you bring mom aboard. The stuff with Colbert was fantastic. It's been a whirlwind for that goaltender. What about his wife? What about Sarah, who's a hockey fan, a lifelong Toronto Maple Leafs fan, someone that's followed him from rink to rink because she loves hockey and loves watching her husband play net. She knows all about bad coffee and Zamboni fumes. We decided it might be more interesting on this week's edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast, to talk to Sarah about her experience going back to Saturday.
Global National with Robin Gill. Reporting tonight, Colleen Christie.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us. We begin tonight with the story everyone is talking about. A 42-year-old Zamboni driver from Whitby, Ontario, called into NHL action last night. David Ayers stepped up for the Carolina Hurricanes after the team goalies went down. And what he managed to do in net surpassed everyone's expectations.
It's an ending fit for Hollywood, an unlikely hockey hero and his history-making moment.
When I saw the text message, this guy's playing with me right now, like I'm going in.
Last night, 42-year-old David Ayers, a married father of three with a day job, made his NHL debut.
And of course, Twitter lit up with his name overnight, and it's still trending today. The Hurricanes changing their bio to Dave Ayers, the GOAT, greatest of all time. And hockey fans of all stripes took to Twitter to express their delight at the highly unlikely turn of events that led to what many are calling the second miracle on ice.
So you stayed out on the ice. Did you have confidence, or were you totally terrified?
I was confident until I hit the ice, and then I got terrified. I think you get out there, and the crowd all of a sudden goes wild, and I'm wearing the Toronto Maple Leafs colors with a Carolina Hurricanes jersey on. Everyone's kind of like in shock, what's going on? And I was in shock as well. I just wanted to make sure I got on the ice and didn't fall down.
David Ayers, the Hurricanes emergency goalie, got the win at the ripe old age of 42. David, how you feeling today?
I'm a little tired, but I feel good.
Ayers' wife and undeniably biggest fan, Sarah, who started out by simply tweeting two words, one of which I can't repeat, to express her shock, joy, and amazement. She followed up with, "I am the happiest, proudest woman on the planet because my human got to live out his ultimate dream."
Pleased to be joined now by Sarah Ayers, the better half of E-Bug David. First of all, and I don't want to sound trite about this question, but I'm curious legitimately. We go back to Saturday, we fast forward to today. Your lives have been turned upside down with passports and planes and shows and everything.
Yeah.
Sarah, spot quiz. What day is it?
You know what? Stop it. It's Wednesday, and I only know that because we were supposed to go home on Thursday. So that's awesome. The only reason I know that. Yeah.
But before we get you to sort of walk through what your lives have become going back to Saturday, how many, in your estimation, because I'm a beer league hockey player too,
yeah,
how many bad beer league hockey games did you sit through to finally see your husband playing an NHL game?
You know what? There's been quite a few. You know what? I love a lot of the guys that he plays beer league with, and some of them are ex-pro guys, and some of them, they come down for the summer and they play and then head back to Europe and that. So I can't say it's absolutely horrible, but there's certain games that I'd rather paint my nails and do that instead of watching. But
as an aside, my wife checked out of watching my games years ago. So good for you for hanging in there.
Well, see, that's how it always goes, though, that I find. Like, even one of our buddies, his wife plays, or sorry, he plays hockey with Dave, the beer league, and she was saying to me, she's like, "I feel bad now that you go to every game and I don't even show up." She stays home and drinks wine, and I'm thinking I'm missing out on some kind of special life.
Elliot,
how many Twitter followers did you have on Saturday before the game?
I think there was around like 1,300, and that's only because people started following me after the game at the 3-on-3 tournament that they had outside at Nathan Phillips Square. And because before that, the numbers were so low, like it was pathetic. I just did it to pretty much catch up on sports and that and chirp here and there. But yeah, it's 1,300, I think, right before the game.
And now you're almost at 20,000.
Yeah.
I see one tweet that has 83,000 likes.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
I see another tweet that has 38,000 likes. I see another tweet that you'll probably remember that has 31,000 likes.
That's it?
What's it been like to have all of this attention?
It's wild. I think what made it pretty cool for me was last night at the autograph signing, right before the game, people were coming up to me, shaking my hand, and they're like, I follow you on Twitter. And I'm like, that's so cool. Like, before it was just my friends that followed me on Twitter, but it's, it's been so cool even to see it. Every time I go on Twitter, there's a lot on there right now. I kind of feel bad about the people that I kept in contact with on a regular basis because it's all getting lost in the mix and that. So even the Facebook messages and that, I can't keep up with right now.
I know there was a chance not that long ago that Dave could have been called in a game against the Chicago Blackhawks, but of course Saturday was a whole other issue. In that Chicago game, how nervous was Dave and how nervous were you, if at all?
Okay, so that game was, I think that was the first game that he got called into. That's the one that Corey Crawford went down for. And I started running to the truck and he's like, what are you doing? Because we have to get the equipment out of the truck and then we bring it into the room. And he's like, why are you running? And he's like, calm down. And I'm like, no, you've got to get there. You've got to get this done. And so he kept making fun of me the whole time. And he's just sitting there. He's as calm as anything. And I'm a wreck. And it wasn't the greatest of situations, but he'd message me and he'd be like, oh, and he was just sitting in a tiny little room with no TV at the time. So I think he was trying to watch the game on his phone. But it was cool. And that's the closest we thought we were going to get to this experience. Like, okay, cool. You got called down. That's awesome. Like, that's what we wanted out of this kind of thing, right? For him to have that experience of just going down.
Describe then in your words, what you were going through watching him come out onto the ice on Saturday night. I can only imagine.
I thought I was going to be like totally pumped about it. And the fear that went through me was unbelievable. I think it was, you don't know how everybody's going to take it. And I think that's the biggest thing is I didn't know if what it was going to be like stepping onto the ice with the Toronto fans. I didn't know if people knew who he was from the 3-on-3 game. There was a few people in that, but like Toronto are diehard. So they pay attention to everything that's going on, right? For the most part. So it was a lot of fear with him going on there.
And so the two goals go in, it's 4-3. And like, I know lots of parents who don't want their kids to be goalies.
Oh. Yeah. Oh yeah. I was one of those parents. Yeah.
So how are you doing? Like, what are you thinking?
It's different when you see your kid out there. It's a different kind of feeling. And the first two goals went in and I was like, it's okay. He just needs to shake this off because I know the same thing happened at, Nathan Phillips Square, where he let a couple bad ones go in right off the hop. And it's nerves, and you know it's nerves. And I couldn't imagine being in front of 20,000 people and cameras and everything. So I knew he would be okay. And that's the one thing we talked about is after the game, I said, you just needed to come off the ice. And in the intermission, I said all he needed was to calm down. And I knew he'd be absolutely fine going back out there afterwards.
What did you think of the third? Like, that was, first of all, a great performance by your husband.
Yeah.
But two, that was like this wonderful performance by the Carolina Hurricanes.
Oh, it was.
Who were determined not to hang this guy out to dry.
Yeah, they rallied. Like, they kept that puck out of their zone. Parts of me wanted shots because parts of me wanted to see him in more action than that. But yeah. Then I saw Hyman come down, and Hyman's one of my favorites. He always has been. And I saw him come down, and I'm like, oh, this is it. He's going to score here. But no, I was happy when they kept it out. I was cheering for Carolina at the end of it. And I love my Leafs. So
was that a weird feeling for you?
It was at first. And then as soon as I saw him start saving the shots and that, it kind of just, it was like there was no loyalty to the Leafs, as much as that sounds horrible. But it was kind of like, okay, now I'm Dave's my concentration kind of thing. And him getting out and doing this was all that I was focused on. I thought, honestly, too, that the Leafs were winning until close to the end of the game. And I looked up and I had no idea of what the score was.
Wow.
Yeah, just because I was so concentrated on what he was doing and nerves and everything and that. So
Did you just sort of blank everybody out around you? Like, everyone, just leave me alone. I need to watch this. I'd love to talk to you right now. Please leave me alone.
So there was a couple guys that were up there and they were talking to me and that, and they did a good job because they were calming me down for the most part, asking a couple questions here and there. But it got to a point where I was like, hey, I'm going to head down. And I walked down the a couple seats and I talked to one of the ushers that was there who always deals with us. And I was going to just stand with her and she says, go have a seat. And she put me off to the seat by myself and I could actually concentrate on everything that was going on. Yeah. And just kind of absorb it a little bit better.
So when could you breathe?
think it was after they announced the three stars. They said the third and the second star were Carolina, and I was like, well, there's no way they're giving this to a Toronto guy for the first, so I knew it had to be Dave. And I was recording it, and I was screaming as loud as I possibly could. I was jumping, like, and I was by myself. So for me to do something like this, I am the quietest, most shy person. So for me to do something like this is just, yeah.
I got to tell you, Sarah, after seeing your Twitter feed and all your reaction, the last adjective I would have put with you is shy. I have to tell you that.
It's like it's one of those, if I go into a place where there's a lot of people, then the anxiety builds up a little bit. But I told Dave today, we were sitting down, we actually got a few minutes, went to the Cheesecake Factory, and I said to him, I was like, it's our staple when we come to the States, we have to do it. But I told him, I said, I needed something that was going to bring me out of my shell a little bit. Like, it's one thing chirping online and posting things and that, or being with friends and talking with friends, you're completely different. But it's been a really neat situation to be in.
Can you just describe the moment, Sarah, where you and David first got a chance to see each other after the game, mm-hmm. where it was, what you said to each other? Can you paint that picture, please?
So we were, I was waiting outside the player's door for him to come out, because that's where I thought at first, and my brain wasn't working. So I wasn't associating, okay, he's not going to come out the Leafs door, he's going to come out Carolina's door. So I went down to the truck, I went back and forth several times, and finally he got in touch with me and said, come up to the Carolina end. So he walked out of the dressing room and walked down to me, and he had a massive smile on his face, and I think mine was probably bigger. But I jumped up and I gave him a hug, and I wrapped my arms around him and told him that I loved him and how proud I was of him. And he got all teary-eyed, and it's our thing. His mom and I have this thing where it's like we make it our purpose to make him cry, kind of thing. And then he took me back to the room, and he was showing me everything, the game sheet. He was so proud of everything, like the jersey. Yeah, it was really neat.
And the stick goes to the Hall of Fame, and that's a wonderful thing as well. You know,
yeah,
home is the nest, right? Like, home is where everything is normal all over again, and whatever happens during the day, you go back home, and that's where there's comfort, and that's where there's regularity, that's where things are normal.
Right.
That day was chaos for you guys, as we all know. What's it like when you got home, where everything is normal? What's that conversation like?
The kids, they called and asked if they could stay up and until we got home, so we said, of course, and we walked in the door, and all three of them were standing right at the front door, ready to take the bags and the sticks. And Colton, who's 9, said to him, he said, I'm so proud of you. And it was pretty cool to see, to see his reaction like that. And walked in, and Dave was just telling them what was going on, how things had happened and that. And it was so, we got in late. So, and emotions, like, you have that adrenaline dump. And I don't think I've ever had it like that before, where you're exhausted. So we just wanted our beds and went to bed. And then if both of us were wired, could not sleep at all.
What's been the highlight of the last 72 hours? Of all the things you've done, what's been the highlight?
Okay, so I got to meet James Reimer yesterday, and it was the first time. It was the first time I've ever met him, and I've never asked a guy for a photo before. And I said, I'm really sorry to do this. I said, I need your picture. And he was awesome. He was phenomenal. I always loved him when he was with the Leafs. So to see him standing right there was like, it was pretty cool. I've been a Leafs fan since I was a little girl, and I followed them religiously. So that, and also the people that have been here, they've been fantastic. They've been so supportive. Doesn't matter that you're on the Leafs side of things. And then we also had, I could go on about this forever. We had friends of ours drive all the way from Toronto, just outside in Whitby, all the way up. Two of them brought their children, and they made a road trip of it, and they came here and they supported them, and it was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Bought the shirts and everything. They had guys in the stands buying them beers, and yeah, it was pretty, pretty neat.
That's fantastic.
That is fantastic. But like, I'm surprised, like, James Reimer and not Stephen Colbert or the Today Show or anything like that.
See, I didn't get to do that stuff, so I missed out on the whole
passport,
like,
issue.
Today Show
right,
stuff,
of course,
right?
Of course.
Yeah, so I didn't get to see anything in New York, which I totally missed out on. But I'm sure Dave will make it up to me. But I would have liked to have seen it. But yeah, on this end, we got to do a couple like news things, and I can't even remember fully. Family will call me and they'll be like, oh, I just saw you on TV. And I'm like, what was it? Because I don't remember what we did. So we haven't even had a chance to really go back. I saw a few clips here and there of Colbert, but that was it. I haven't watched the thing in its entirety.
Okay, here's my last question for you. Mm-hmm. Do you ever want David to do this again?
I don't know.
Retire undefeated.
that's the way I see it. Is it's like, do you want to go in there and all of a sudden be 1-1, or do you want to be 1-0? I'm liking the 1-0, but I know I think he'd kill it if he were to do it again, to be honest. And I don't think I don't know. I like the way it is right now.
Whatever happens, Sarah, happens. It's still going to be a special story, and I'm sure you guys, next time you go to the Hall of Fame together with the kids, first stop is going to be to go see Dad's stick, which is outstanding.
Yeah, I think they've got us in there on Friday, so it'll be pretty cool.
That's amazing.
It'll be pretty cool to go see it. Yep.
It's been a delight catching up. Congratulations to your entire family. This is a family achievement. No one does this on their own. Congrats to you and Dave, the kids, the entire family. It's been a delight catching up, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Elliot, so that's Sarah Ayres, and I love hockey families.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself to be a hockey family. My wife and I met in a hockey dressing room at a breast cancer charity co-ed hockey tournament. Yes, I pulled a wife out of a dressing room, Elliot Friedman. I didn't pull her out of a burning car, despite the fact that she's amazing and I'm not, and everyone says, how the heck did you end up with her? And Sarah Ayres in that family,
I usually get, does she have eye problems?
She fell down a flight of stairs when she was young. The Ayres family is a wonderful family, and Sarah is such a delightful person to talk to. And you can just tell the pure, I always talk about hockey joy on this podcast and elsewhere. Just talk about like the unbridled hockey joy of going to watch your favorite hockey team, knowing your husband might get in the game. Sure, it's for the other team, but he becomes not just a local celebrity, not just a national celebrity, but an international celebrity. Like, what made this thing take off so much? We've seen emergency backup goaltenders before in the NHL. This one might have been a little bit different because he played longer than most E-Bugs. Sure, it was on Hockey Night in Canada.
It was Toronto.
Is that just it, that it's Toronto and that's the only explanation?
It was Toronto in a huge game, and it looked like a disaster, and then he won.
You know what the hook was, though? The Zamboni.
Oh, yes.
If he's an accountant, I don't know if it's this story. If it's, hey, he's an accountant by day, and now he's a goaltender, and he goes in.
I disagree with you.
It's everything attached to. What was the headline everywhere? Zamboni driver backstops the Carolina Hurricanes to win.
But Scott Foster was a big story, and he's not a Zamboni driver.
No, and that's what I'm saying. It was a big story, but not as big as this. He's on Colbert.
But it wasn't Hockey Night in Canada. The Hockey Night in Canada thing against the Leafs, it matters. And also, that game was 6-2.
Yes. Does that resonate, though, with the U.S.
Yes,
audience?
Obviously.
You've worked in TV for how long? You know you need a hook to sell a story. It's an easy story when you say Zamboni driver.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. I think even without Zamboni driver, it was account, it would still be accountant beats Leafs. Lawyer beats Leafs. It wouldn't have mattered.
Hedge fund manager beats Leafs.
Well, they would have been rooting for the Leafs against the hedge fund manager.
Quick thought on Sarah Ayres. We do thank her for stopping by the podcast today. A very busy schedule for the entire family. We appreciate it.
Look, I think it comes down to this. You want to see people do well, right? Like, some of us sign up for this. You know, we do this job. We sign up for the fact that our mistakes, our good things and our bad things happen in public.
Yep.
You're the E-Bug. Yeah, you sign up for that to some degree, but not like that. And you're expected to fail, right? And in that situation, it looked like it was going really dark. That's a John Scott story.
We should talk about Jay Bouwmeester and the St. Louis Blues. And just before we started recording today's podcast, which you're receiving on Thursday morning, Jay Bouwmeester spoke for the first time since the entire NHL world held its breath.
Anybody have any questions?
How do you feel?
I'm at the point now, I feel pretty good. That's kind of the weird thing about this whole thing is you go from something that happened totally out of the blue and unexpected to being in the hospital for a couple of days, and then now there's some restrictions as to what I can do, but I feel pretty normal, so it's a good thing.
Jay, you talk about evaluating things. Does that include your hockey future? Is that settled at the moment, or do you still have to evaluate that?
Yeah, there's been a lot going on. I think that's something I'm definitely going to have to evaluate, but to say I've done that, I wouldn't say fully yet. There's things, decisions that I'm going to have to make, but that'll come later.
Yeah, just to help or clarify, Jay and I have spoken over the last week or so, and we both understand that he won't participate this year in the regular season or playoffs for us. We talked about longer-term things that may or may not happen, and both feel that, you know, it's February. You don't have to make long-term decisions at this point. And so he's going to take time, again, get back in with his family and be around the team, and he'll address those things as the summer progresses.
You know what was the best thing for me in that press conference? He seemed exactly the same. He looked and sounded like the Jay Bouwmeester that we all have kind of seen out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just calm, matter of fact.
What did you expect, though?
I don't know. I kind of expected
the same Joe. I honestly always expect the exact same Jay Bouwmeester.
But that's the thing. Like
whether it's the highest of highs, that's Jay Bouwmeester.
It's like with my son, right? Like I always judge how he's feeling by, is he acting normal? So I guess that's kind of the way I look for people. I look for patterns. Is this, like I was in a bad mood last Tuesday and you said you knew right away that I was different.
Yeah.
So I always look for that kind of thing. But I was happy to see that he was normal Jay Bouwmeester. I'd heard he'd been around and the players really appreciated it. Doug Armstrong mentioned that. First of all, the Blues and the Ducks, once again, it deserves to be repeated, and all the people who worked that night, just fantastic. The Blues, the Ducks, the doctors, everybody involved, the EMTs, the NHL for the protocol they put, spectacular. But I think the Blues and the way they've handled the aftermath, you know, making their players available, or at least the captains and Doug Armstrong. Like Doug Armstrong, someone told me, he was, I think, one of two GMs who was at the under-18s over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me they saw Doug Armstrong there and they saw Steve Yzerman there. So Doug Armstrong, he flies back. He's not even in Anaheim for the game. And, you know, everybody still does what they need to do. The next day he's in Vegas for the press conference. I'm sure he's exhausted, but you have to be there. You're the face of your franchise. And, you know, then when they come home, they do that announcement to the fans that airs on the scoreboard. Excellent. They have another update. Like, they've just handled it so well. And, you know, I think the team's doing the right thing. They're saying, like, Jay Bouwmeester says, I have to make some decisions eventually. And then Doug Armstrong grabs the mic and he says, okay, let me just make sure we have this clear. He's not going to play for the rest of this season, regular season, and playoffs. Like, I just think it's been handled really well. I think the Blues have really done a clinic on it. But I'll bet you one thing, Jay Bouwmeester wants to play.
I would be willing to gamble that the minute Jay Bouwmeester was conscious, that game against Anaheim, his first thought is, can I go play?
I would agree with that 1,000%. Not even 100%, as I normally say. 1,000%. I think like it's no pressure. Take your time. Who knows where this goes? I bet the odds are not great that he'll be able to resume his career. But why rush anything? You know, just give him time. And I think they've handled it really well. And, you know, the one thing about Bouwmeester is, did I tell the story about Nick last year in the final?
You've told me. I don't know if you told it on the pod.
Okay, so if I haven't said it on the podcast, like when the final's over, I try to just say thanks for the season and all your help during the year. I go to the defeated dressing room and then go to the guys on the ice who are celebrating. And as you know, it's berserk and the Blues are, you know, waterboarding each other into the Stanley Cup with the champagne. Like someone told me the owner, Tom Stillman, like apparently there's video of that. I'd love to see it. And, you know, they're all going crazy and they should. Yeah. It's a fantastic victory. And Bouwmeester is the calmest looking guy around. Like normal. And, you know, Nick walked by And he said to Nick, like, hey, Nick, I know you picked us to win the Stanley Cup this year. And it's just like, it was like, what? Like, you know, like just out of nowhere. And, you know, when he was young, you know, he was so quiet. He was so reserved. He still really is, but he was even more so then. And, you know, us, we didn't know him, but guys would tell me, like, great guy. And, like, he could get really mad. Like, he's got a brutal temper. And I was like, what? Like, Jay Bouwmeester? Really? And, you know, people really liked him, and the coaches loved him. I mean, he was all on all the international teams. It was just nice to see him look like Jay Bouwmeester. Obviously, they love having him around, and, you know, I like the fact that they are just kind of waiting.
This might be awkward and uncomfortable, but I think that Jay Bouwmeester got a gift, and not the obvious one.
Second chance?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, there's a real gift in almost dying. Your life goes on day in, day out, week in, week out. Things become more mundane. We get older. We get jaded. We get cynical.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have kids. And life renews itself again. And we get a chance to see life again through a children's eyes. And how they are amused at the smallest things, you know, the bristles on a toothbrush, crack in the sidewalk. All these things hold things that we used to feel and we don't feel anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned this in the Eddie Olchek interview. One of the things that I really firmly believe is that we are all born with two lives, and our second life begins when we realize we only have one. And sometimes we feel that and sometimes we don't, and Jay Bouwmeester knows it. It was a horrible thing that happened to Jay Bouwmeester. It was awful. It was awful for everybody. It was awful for his family. It was awful for him. It was awful for Darren Pang right there. Everybody who was right there for all of it. Vince Dunn, who was right in front of Jay Bouwmeester, I believe. Everybody who was around. It was awful. But that was a present for Jay Bouwmeester. I really believe that. I don't want to ever say that I want to get close to getting that gift, but it's a gift. It's really risky to want that gift, but that's a real gift for Jay Bouwmeester. All right, we'll finish up the podcast with the Franklin Electric, four-piece band out of Montreal, just released an EP and are wrapping up their mini tour in Kingston, Hamilton, and London.
Go Stangs, go.
From their
Go Stangs,
In Your Go Heart EP,
Go here's Stangs,
Franklin Go Electric with Who.
Give me back the face of love, ain't the one like before. Trust me, I know those waters, they're much colder than before. But we're all lost by design, not the life that you wanted. Down the hallways you tread, turn the tables of time. Out of touch, dream dealers, and you can't buy stones. Bringing you back when you wanted more. Confidence leaving when you dance with me. You can't find the feeling, can't find the feeling anymore. Can't find the feeling, can't find the feeling anymore.
Okay, quick programming note as well for next week. We're going to have sort of a Coaches Week theme. You'll hear from Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And when I watch Sidney Crosby make plays, and whether it's a Dominic Simone pass in the Minnesota game, whether it was Tuesday night, the pass to Brian Rust across the crease that no one sees coming, which was a beautiful play, I say to myself, when I look at Crosby making plays and passing and finding these guys that no one sees out there, it's almost as if he's saying to his teammates, don't worry, I'll find you. Play your game and I'll find you. When you watch Sidney Crosby play? And when you think of those two plays specifically, and you've seen much more, obviously, than we have of Sidney Crosby, when you see some of these passes and these plays, what goes through your mind? To me, it's, don't worry, I'll find you.
Well, he never ceases to amaze us. You know, it becomes the new normal in Pittsburgh because he does it night in and night out for us. And, you know, he's just one of those guys that has elite vision. You know, he's a generational talent. And those guys don't come around that often. And so to have the opportunity to coach him and be around him every day and witness what he does on the ice is, you know, it certainly, from my standpoint, it's a privilege to be around him. You know, the one thing I will say is the advice that we give players when we put them with Sid is just play your game, because he has the ability to adapt his game to the guys we put around him. One of the discussions I've had just recently with Jason Zucker, when we got him from Minnesota, in the first game or two that he was, we put him right with Sid, as you guys know, our observation was he was, a lot of times, he's waiting for the puck. And one of the things that I said to our coaching staff that we need to help Zuck with is he doesn't need to wait, because Sid will get him the puck. We're trying to utilize Jason's speed. We think the speed factor that Jason brings is a competitive advantage. So we want him to utilize that. We're trying to get him into that extra gear. And we don't need him to wait, because when he plays with Sid, he doesn't have to. Sid's going to get him the puck. And I think that's what you're alluding to with his passing ability. But it's almost like, and the coaching staff, we kind of chuckle about this a lot, you know, when we talk about Sid and his overall game and just his intellect, we always say that Sid's playing chess when some of the other guys are playing checkers, right? And he's just one of those elite players that anticipates plays two and three moves in advance. Mm-hmm. And so the guys that play with him, they have to get used to that. You know, they get surprised sometimes by when they get the puck because they don't expect it.
Give me back the face of love. Ain't the one like before. Trust me, I know those waters. They're much colder than before. But we're all lost by design. Not the life that you wanted. Down the hallways you tread. You tread again.